And now Libya is also on the opinion page in an op-ed featured today on the Atlantic Monthly's website. Steve Clemens argues that a plan of action is crucial in order to keep the hopes and aspirations of Libyans moving forward. And that plan, he says, must leave Libyans in control of their own future. We've posted a link to that piece at our website. What do you think should be the most effective way for the United States to help Libya now? Give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255. Or send us email. The address is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Steve Clemens is the Washington editor-at-large for The Atlantic magazine. He's also a senior fellow at the New America Foundation. He joins us now here in Studio 3A. Steve, nice to have you with
us. Great to be with you.
Anything surprising in that statement from the president? It echoed actually a lot of the themes in your own piece about Libya for Libyans.
Right. I was very pleased to hear the anchor, the kicker of that talk, in which I think he anchored said the most important thing, which is that this needs to be a Libyan story. They need to direct their future. Prime Minister David Cameron made the same key point today. And I thought that President Obama's statement was very strong. It went through and did a number of things. And I'll expect to sort of see after a period of time whether Barack Obama's gamble about intervening with other allies, but intervening in an unusual way. We weren't the lead in all of this. We allowed that leadership to be diversified among a cast of players, and we basically created a tilting point opportunity for the opposition, which it might have lost. And that's a very different kind of engagement than we've seen in years past for the United States. It may be what we were trying to do with the G20 economically, of bringing many more stakeholders into solving global problems. And we may be seeing that same sort of thing evolve on the global security side of the equation.
You make the point in your piece that the toppling of a hated leader is not the end game. It's the beginning, right?
Absolutely.
Then you draw parallels to Saddam Hussein, certainly. And if this is the beginning of what is next for Libya, and although the president did say several times, you know, your revolution is your own, the future is in the hands of the people, he also said, we will stay in close coordination with the transitional council and, you know, help you achieve what it is you're going to achieve. So where is that line there?
Well, as they bake this pie of the next governance, the next government in Libya that tries to include many different factors and tribes and different players. There are heroes in this revolution that we don't know yet. I mean, I think the decisive change was what happened on the western side of Tripoli with the Berber tribes coming out of the mountains and shutting down a wing of Gaddafi's flank that he didn't have to worry about before. And they haven't been part of the Benghazi experiment. So there's going to be some change and modification in that. And I think one of the challenges for the euphoric West, the French, the British, the Americans that have been so involved, is to be helpful, to be there, but to be also on the sidelines. That if we become too big in the equation, if we send lots of NGOs, we may very well create a backlash. Because one of the, as in much of the Arab world, but I think it's deeper in Libya, there is an undercurrent of deep Islamism. Muammar Gaddafi harassed, detained, killed many jihadists that were going off to fight us in Afghanistan and Iraq. He was oddly an ally of ours in a strange way in that. And his son, Saif al-Islam, was in a process of having a lot of these Islamists released at the time. But if we take one thing that really unifies them is their objection to strong Western presence inside their country. And so that line is going to be there, one of being a help, being a counselor, being a provision of best practices that we can do, but not being so embedded in what comes next that we create a counterforce against our presence.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. On the other hand, there's quite a lot at stake. It's hard to sit on the sidelines when there's U.S. priorities and strategy at stake in that region.
Well, I think that goes without saying, but that's easy for me because as a strategist, I look at Egypt and say Egypt is the 900-pound gorilla that really, really will set the trend. 85 million people is the experiment that really has to go right. I'd love Libya to go right. I would love Tunisia to go right. But to a certain degree, again, talking about the trade-offs in our attention, Libya, while it's gone well so so far, nonetheless, has taken a lot of bandwidth of the White House in terms of attention, diplomatic chits that we've used, and we may need to use those elsewhere. Now, it's been useful and good for President Obama, I think, politically, to see what's unfolded in Libya, but it's still not a vital national security interest the way Egypt is. And so we need to keep these different objectives and challenges in front of us all at the same time.
But if there are limited resources from the Obama White House in terms of attention and expertise to pay attention to Libya, there's still an awful lot of unanswered questions there. I mean, as you mentioned, the Berbers and the Benghazi forces are not necessarily united in some way. I mean, what happens to actually govern Libya next is still a very open and potentially dangerous question.
I think it's a huge question. I mean, there are so many easy scenarios that one can imagine, and they're very positive ones too, but easy scenarios that could take you into civil war, civil strife, real competition among players in the region. I've got some good friends. When we were sitting in some of these White House meetings, on occasion they would bring think tankers in and talk about Libya, talk about Egypt and Tunisia, and some very good friends from Human Rights Watch who have more confidence than I do in the members of the Transition Council and their humanitarian credentials. And I would tell them, I said, I certainly hope they've got a few thugs on their side, because that is a brutal place. And it is a place, we saw this as well in the recent murder of the Supreme Commander, General Yunus, in Libya, where some of his own people took him on. So it's going to be a rough and tumble struggle to a certain degree. But on the other hand, we see some real competent people. Former Minister of Justice is chairman of the Chairman Jalil is chairman of the Transition Council, and I am impressed with what they've done over the last month to try and begin thinking about what a governance strategy and structure would look like. But doing it on paper and doing it in real life are very different things. And, you don't want to be too much of a cynic in this. You want to be hopeful that they'll get it right. But I think it is not unreasonable to begin to think about what are the other currents that could pull this apart, and what are the missteps that we as outsiders in this process that want to be helpful could take that undermine our friends that we would like to see run the regime. And that is, we need to be very careful that this is going to be an experiment in Libyan nationalism, a new inclusive Libyan nationalism. It has to be their story. And that's exactly where President Obama ended his comments today.
Let's hear from Paula in Tucson. Paula, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. As you were talking, it occurred to me that this is an absolutely wonderful opportunity for our country to experiment with a new way of having influence in other countries where appropriate. We're not involved in a war in Libya. We're not in some kind of awful quagmire like we are in Afghanistan and Iraq. And this is a great time for us, as the gentleman said, to start looking at how we respectfully support the aspirations of a nation that doesn't look like us and that may not want some of the things that we think other people should want based on our own country. And as badly as we would love to liberate certain groups of people in, say, a Muslim society, for instance, women, I think a lot of times we Americans forget that no country invaded us when women didn't have the vote in our country and when there were laws on the books that women were actually chattel.
Paula, let's give Steve Clements a chance to respond. Thanks for your call.
Well, I think I agree with the caller in the sense that what President Obama and our allies were able to do was to engage this challenge in a way where we didn't guarantee the outcome. We created a tilting point opportunity for the opposition. In fact, when things were tilting against them, we tilted it back. But there was really no guarantee. This could have gone on for a very, very long time. In fact, there were scenarios that people like myself considered that the longer that Gaddafi survived in his area, it would be a lot like what China did in Tiananmen. We eventually went back and made nice with China after Tiananmen. And eventually other countries might go do the same thing with Libya. And so I do think that intervening the way we had was quite clever and hopefully a model that we might learn something from in future cases.
Steve Clements, the Washington editor-at-large for The Atlantic magazine. We have a link to his piece on our website, npr.org. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Tomorrow, we'll look at next steps for Libya as rebels face ongoing attacks from pro-Gaddafi forces. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Rebecca Roberts.